Okay, Liz, here's some quick math. The less your business spends on operations, multiple systems, delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs, you cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems, and you improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors.
Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/Hollywood. NetSuite.com/Hollywood. NetSuite.com/Hollywood.
Oh my God, I'm so hungover.
Why did we schedule this meeting for today?
I don't know.
Mary, do we have Advil?
Hi, and welcome to Happier in Hollywood, the podcast about how to be happier, healthier, saner, more creative, more successful, and more productive in a backbiting, superficial, chaotic, unpredictable, fundamentally insane world. I'm Sarah Fain, a TV writer and producer living in LA, and with me is my high school friend and writing partner of 19 years, Liz.
That's me, Liz Craft. On this podcast, we talk about being writers in Hollywood, how we balance a career and friendship, and how to survive the war of attrition that is life in Los Angeles.
In this week's episode, we're going to talk about writer's room roles, and then we're going to check in with our assistant Mary, who wants advice about her first big Hollywood meeting.
And this week's Hollywood hack has me posing for pictures with more confidence.
Yes, but first, an update. Our show, The Fix, has premiered.
Yay!
Woo-hoo! Woo! It's out there in the world.
Yes, it finally happened, Sarah.
Yes, oh my God.
The Fix premiered. It was, and I have to say, we were really wrecks for days leading up to it. I mean, like, you know, sort of balls on the floor, fetal position type wrecks. But then somehow we were able, the night of the premiere, to actually enjoy ourselves.
Yes, we just put it all aside and had a really great night.
Yeah, we had an amazing party. We were so lucky because our executive producer, Chuck Reed, hooked us up with his brother, Gijo's Space, which is Sugar Studios.
Sugar Studios LA.
Yeah, Sugar Studios LA. I love that name. Which is at the top of the building the Wiltern is in, and it has this amazing view. It has a theater, and it's actually a post-production house, but we had an event there. And it was just, like, so glamorous.
It was. It was such a perfect space for the party because everybody could kind of go into the theater and the movie theater chairs.
Yes.
Like, they're so comfortable and soft. And everybody, it did feel very glamorous, I have to say. We often say our lives are supremely unglamorous, that
last
Hollywood
night
jobs
felt glamorous.
Generally just drudgery, but last night was pretty glam.
Yes. So, first of all, thank you to Sugar Studios LA for that. And everyone was just so positive and happy and hugging each other and taking pictures and excited. And it just felt great. I texted my parents. I said, whatever happens, we had a magical night.
Yes.
Which we didn't think we were going to have.
No, we truly did not.
Because we were miserable leading up to it.
Yeah. And then after the premiere party that we had with the cast and the writers and all of our amazing
and
executives. We went to the premiere party that was happening at Idle Hour.
Yes, our HIH listeners had a premiere party, and we got there for like the last 20 minutes of the show and watched with them. And it was so much fun.
It was. I did not need that last drink that I had.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm feeling it this morning.
Yes.
But I was so happy we went. It really made my night, I have to say. It was really awesome.
Well, it was fun to watch people watching.
Because
we didn't do that at all at our party. We were just like, because we've seen,
tweet,
the episode
tweet
so many times. We were tweeting. We were talking to people. Yeah. We were running around. But at Idle Hour, we really watched everybody watching, and that was so fun.
It was. All the, like, big twists. Everybody's, you know, yes. eyes would open and jaws would drop, and
yes.
it was very satisfying.
Of course, then, Sarah, after our wonderful, magical evening, we did have to wake up and get ratings.
Yes.
Which is always extremely stressful.
Yeah.
And the ratings were kind of eh.
Yeah.
They're okay.
It's that thing of, like, right now the TV business is changing and yeah. overnight ratings just aren't what they used to be.
Especially for 10 o'clock shows.
Yeah.
Most people watch 10 o'clock shows later. They don't yeah. watch it live. And so now we're really waiting for Live Plus 3 and Live Plus 7. We talked about those ratings on a recent episode, sort of what all that means.
Yeah. So, of course, yeah. we wish that what we were doing this morning is being just laden with bottles of champagne
yes.
from all the people who yes. are happy for us. But instead, it's going to be a much more typical television experience of just
more waiting.
More waiting.
Yeah, I guess everybody knows from this podcast that there's a lot of waiting, a lot of just waiting
and
for
hoping.
Yes. Wishing, waiting, hoping. But, you know, the response on social media has been great. So
Amazing.
That's very heartening. People yeah. do seem hooked.
The people who watch the show yes. seem to be really into it.
Yes, and very engaged. Yeah. So everybody, keep tweeting, keep watching, keep telling your friends. I mean,
keep
the best
DVRing.
Thing you can do is tell your friends to yeah. watch the fix.
Yes.
But really, it really was a great night and a great capper. The only downside was that Marcia was in New York doing press.
Yeah, that was a real bummer.
Yeah. So
I felt like we did this whole thing, like, you know, linked arm in arm.
Yeah.
You know, and it was sad. I yes. missed her a lot. It was a bummer.
Yes. But,
oh, well.
You know, we talked.
We'll have to get these ratings up, have a season two, and have our premiere party with Marcia next year.
All right. That's a plan.
Okay.
Okay, Sarah. It is time for From the Treadmill Desks Of, in which we discuss what's most pressing in our work psyches. And believe it or not, there are things besides the fix and the fix ratings that we think about. And this week, it's writer's room roles, which is not easy to say. Because in episode 95, we talked to Ola Shakumbi, who was a writer on The Fix, and we mentioned that his role was as a problem solver in
yes.
the writer's room, which is not why we hired him. It just that's what emerged as a great role for him.
Yeah.
And then it made us realize we have all these other roles in the writer's room.
Yes, and right now, all over Hollywood, it's about to be staffing season, so people are kind of dispersing, taking meetings, planning meetings, and thinking about what their job is going to be in the next TV season and kind of what role they can occupy in the writer's room. So we thought we would kind of break those down a little bit, kind of when we look around the writer's room, the different roles that we see, which is different than titles.
Yes, we should distinguish. Titles are really about seniority. So
yeah.
there's co-producer, producer, story editor, co-EP, those are all about who's usually just been in the business the longest.
Yeah.
And those, you tend to have more responsibility as you go up the ladder. Roles is really about what position do you fill in the storytelling.
Right.
And we found a few. And the interesting thing is roles emerge and they can also change over time.
Yes.
So it's not like, oh, Ola's a problem solver today. Tomorrow he may have a different role.
Right. But as a co-EP, he will probably have a different role.
Yes.
He won't be the problem solver.
Or he won't just be, not that he's just a problem solver now, but like you kind of do more and more of the roles as you climb.
Yeah. Like I feel like when we first started out, I was a problem solver.
Mm.
Like I felt, you know, the room, it's like its own language and you're learning so much and there's so much happening that if you can kind of focus on one thing, on one problem
like
to solve. Yes, exactly. Look at the micro instead of the macro. That can be a very, very useful skill, as we experienced with Ola, who, I mean, came up with some really episode-changing and series-changing ideas
yes.
just by solving problems.
Yes. And, you know, Sarah, it's funny because I was thinking back, what was my role when we started? I was so lost. I had no role. I think I was always good at being social, which is uh-huh. important. I mean, I was always sort of entertaining people. And the other thing, I was good at picking out a good idea and then championing it. So, like, if I could detect if someone else pitched a good idea, I could say, that's a great idea. And I could keep going back to it. Like, well, I still like David Fury's idea. I couldn't myself have any good ideas. That took a few years.
Well, the champion. I mean, the champion is an important role in a room. Another word for that would be an amplifier.
Yes. Someone who amplifies ideas that may be getting passed over is very important, because a lot of times in television, we go back to an idea that someone pitched 2 days ago, even.
Yeah, all the time.
What's interesting as we talk about these is I bet every career has not only a similar idea that they're different roles, but probably the same roles.
Yeah, I know. It's
like
true.
There's probably the problem solver, the amplifier, the socializer.
Yes. And another one that we thought of was the builder.
Yes.
The builder is such a crucial person to have on a staff.
Yes.
Because they're the person who can take all these different bricks from different people and assemble them into something meaningful. We talk about like the art and the craft of writing. Mm-hmm. It's the craft part. And it's a very hard skill to learn. It's usually like the upper level people who are the builders.
Yes. Usually whoever's number two on staff is like the chief builder.
Yeah.
Is the person who like stands up by the board and is the one who says, okay, like this and then this and then this from everything that's pitched. And that is something that when you get to be that role, then you know you're vitally important to a staff. Now there's also Sarah, the analyzer.
Yes.
And the analyzer tends to be the most annoying person in the room because often they're pointing out problems or being the logic police.
Yeah.
Or saying, but wait, didn't, if we're doing this in Act One, this makes no sense in Act Four.
Yes. They're the ones sitting there with a frown on their face and their chin in their hand going,
Yeah.
And as annoying as that person can sometimes be, they do also serve a vital role.
Yes. Now, I will say an analyzer can up their likability if they also pitch a solution to whatever problem they're – if they can be the analyzer and the problem solver together, that's even better.
Yes. What's kind of a bummer is it feels like as showrunners, we are often the people who come in and have to be the analyzer.
Yeah.
And sometimes we have a solution and sometimes we don't. So
yes, that is true.
That's the part that I always feel bad about in a room.
Yeah.
And then there's my very, very favorite, the font of ideas.
Yes.
I love these people.
Yes.
I couldn't, I mean, when you go into a room and there is someone who is a font of ideas, it is the best thing in the world, especially if, and this is something we always talk about our friends TJ and Rashid in this way, especially if it's someone who has great ideas, but is not attached to them if they don't work.
Right.
Because it's like often someone will pitch something and be attached to it and then they're bummed if it does, if it's not the right thing, and then they're quiet for a while and then, you know.
Or they just won't let it go and you have to spend an hour and a half talking about it.
Yes, exactly. But someone who's just going to be like, all right, that's out. Hey, what about this great idea?
Yes.
Is like your dream.
Yes, because the truth is most ideas don't work.
Yeah, so including our. I mean, that's the thing you realize. It's not personal.
No, it's not personal. I mean, 99 things out of 100 get tossed from anybody. And so to just keep on having ideas and having energy and not getting downtrodden is so valuable. Yeah. Because also it can feel scary sometimes in a room like, oh, my God, what if we don't have another idea? What are we going to do? What are we going to do? But if there's someone where you know, well, we know they'll have another idea because they always have another idea. It's very reassuring.
It is.
And it doesn't have to be that. Again, it's nice if some of the ideas are great, but they don't all have to be great. Uh-uh. They're not all going to be great.
No, it's really about like just that willingness to keep at it.
Yes. Now, there's also the role of being the heart of the show. And you're good at this.
Yeah, I think of it more as like the heart of the character in a way.
Interesting.
I think of it as like if there's a show that I'm just not going to have great plot ideas for, I can usually manage to sort of get inside a character and pitch an interesting emotional arc.
And what's interesting to me about that is that's always the most interesting part of the story. Well, at least to you and me.
I know. It is to us.
But the emotional arc is what makes it not just plot, it makes it a story. Right. Makes it worth telling.
Not just moves.
Not just moves, as Tim and Joss would say.
Yeah.
And I think that is like, once you get to a level where you realize that, I mean, that's when you also start really honing in on the heart.
Yeah. And the plot comes so much easier if you have a good
so much easier
heart, if you have a good emotional through line.
Yeah. And then there's also the big idea person.
Yeah, we love them too.
Yes. The big idea person is the person who comes in and shakes everything up.
Yeah.
They oftentimes they'll come in, they'll say one thing and it will turn everything on its head. And I feel like I can't run a show unless I feel like I'm going to be a big idea person.
Right. Like, we have been approached about running shows, and we sort of think about them and look at them, and you always have that thing where you're just like, nope, nope. This is, like, the clarifying point.
Yes.
You know? Like, yeah. If we feel like we can have big ideas for a show, we have a connection to it, we can do it.
Yeah.
If we don't,
No, because we know that we'll be banging our heads against the wall and that we will not make a great product.
Yeah. Red flag, red flag, yes. Red flag.
Yes. And when someone has a big idea, by the way, electrifying.
The most exciting thing in the world.
I mean, electric.
Yeah.
That is really like the moments we go for.
Yeah.
Because whether it's us or someone else, I mean, that will get me hopping up and down.
Yeah. Yep, absolutely. I remember Brooke and Ola pitched a big idea.
Yes.
Which, again, as staff writers, that's a big deal to have a big idea.
Very big deal.
They pitched a big idea, and it really changed some stuff around.
It sure did. It overthrew a lot of stuff, and it made the show a lot better.
Yeah. All right. So those are the roles in a room as we see them. And again, who you are in one room may be a totally different thing than who you are in another room.
That's
and
true.
Who you evolve to be over time.
Yes. It just can be helpful to look at a room and say, well, what do I feel is not happening here? What can I add? Because if you're filling a gap, that's always incredibly useful. And as we were saying, Sarah, I feel like any job you have, there's going to be gaps, there are roles. If you can analyze what everyone is contributing,
right,
it can help you sharpen what you want to contribute.
Absolutely. Yes. So we want to hear from our listeners, do you have a role in your workplace? Is there a role that you feel like you could fill if it's a, you know, if it's one of these gaps that you're talking about? Send us an email or a voice memo. We love those to happierinhollywood@gmail.com.
Coming up, we give advice to our assistant, Mary. That's going to be fun. But first, this break.
There are some stories about my mom's life that I truly never get tired of hearing. For instance, her first job was as a movie usher, and she would walk around with a flashlight and tell people to get their feet off the seat, and I just love hearing about it. Well, just in time for Mother's Day, I found the perfect gift that captures all her stories for my family forever. It's called Storyworth. Storyworth helps you preserve precious memories and stories from your mother or your mom figure's life for years to come. And at the end, you get it all put together in a book. And I know I will be so happy to have that book on the shelf and be able to open it anytime I want and read a wonderful story about my mom.
Give all the moms in your life a unique, heartfelt gift you'll all cherish for years. Storyworth. Right now, you'll save $10 on your first purchase when you go to storyworth.com/Hollywood. That's storyworth.com/Hollywood to save $10 on your first purchase.
All right, it's time for the outer office, in which we check in with our assistant, Mary, who has a big thing coming up. Mary, what's going on with you?
Yeah, so I'm going in for my first ever general meeting as a writer with a high-profile TV production company.
And you want advice.
Yeah, I don't know. It's like, what do I do? I don't know.
First of all, we should talk about what a general is.
Yeah.
What's your perception of what a general is?
I mean, when I worked at an agency and said a lot of generals, to me, it just seemed like for, you know, executives at production companies or studios to meet writers.
Yeah, okay, that's accurate.
Nailed it.
Nailed it.
My question is, how did this general come about?
Well, it came about through you guys, actually, or through your agent's former assistant.
Through our agent's former assistant.
Okay,
that's good.
Yeah, so.
He has a lot of former assistants.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Out in the world.
So, yeah, he reached out to me and
said,
set it all up.
I read your script and I liked it, so I had this person read it and they want to meet with you?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so the executive that you're meeting with at this high-profile TV production company has read your script.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's fantastic.
Awesome.
First of all, you should know that's often not the case.
Well,
so it's nice that they've actually read you because it makes it much easier to talk to someone when they've read your script.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But advice for Mary. So she's, well, first of all, what are you going to wear?
I was going to wear really nice jeans with a nice top and flats, nice flats.
Perfect. Sounds good. That sounds good.
Okay. Nailed
Mary's
it again.
A very sharp dresser.
Yes.
So.
Not today, but most of the time.
And then the first question you asked us was,
I said, should I pitch my TV show ideas? Which I thought that was a legitimate question.
But. Well, it is a legitimate question, but our answer is no.
Mm-hmm. No, no, no.
Funny enough, I was asking our agent the other day, should I pitch an idea in this meeting? And he was like, no. So advice to us is the same as the advice to you.
It's just pitches are, you know, it's really hard to deliver a great pitch.
Mm-hmm.
So like the bar is so high that in a general, you don't want to give them anything to reject.
Now, listen, let's talk about the point of a general.
Yeah.
Because we have talked about this before on the podcast, but I think it's something we should revisit again and again because this is what so much of Hollywood is about, these general meetings, also called the water bottle tour. And it's about getting to know people. We learned this in one of our first generals.
James O.
Yeah, and it was at UPN at the time?
Yeah, I think so. It was a long time ago.
Long time ago. And he was telling us that, thank goodness you guys are we've always had an advantage being a team because we can kind of play off each other and talk, and that's always made it easier for us. But he was saying, oh, it's good that you're telling me about yourselves because a lot of times I have to pull things out of people. And the whole point of these meetings is for me to get to know writers.
Mm.
And if I don't leave this meeting feeling like I know you, I can't go talk about you to someone else.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, it's really about me getting to know you and saying, hey, I think this showrunner over on X show would really like these people. I think he should meet them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or, oh, I think this executive at such and such network would really connect with her. I'm going to put them together. And if you don't share who you are, how can they do that?
And general meetings can change your career.
Big time.
We had a general meeting. We've talked about this also with Nicole Norwood very, very early in our career. And she was determined to get us on this Kevin Williamson show, Glory Days. She was just like, Kevin will love you. You would be great for this show. And
this is my mission.
Made it her mission. And it totally changed our lives.
Yes.
So general meetings are super important, and that's why we tell people to know what your story is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that goes along with telling people who you are. Know your story.
Like, for instance, with you, Mary, I think the fact that you've been doing all this stand-up lately is really interesting.
Yeah.
I think people find it really interesting because it's such a scary, brave thing to do. And so I think that should be part of your story.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Obviously, the fact that you're from like a town of 100 people in Minnesota is part of your story.
That's in my blurb.
Yeah.
In my short little blurb.
And now, while general meetings can change your life, they also can sort of amount to nothing.
Mm-hmm.
But you never know which is which.
Right. Probably the vast majority amounts to nothing.
Of course. But each one has that potential, so you need to treat each one like it could change your life.
Mm-hmm.
And then at some point, one will.
And then if you have a terrible, just like totally awful, awkward meeting, which you're not going to, I'm just saying, some people out there might have a bad meeting. We've had bad meetings.
Oh, we have.
Maybe recently. you're just building skills for the next meeting.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's okay to have a bad meeting.
Absolutely.
There's always going to be another
They're
one.
They're not all going to be great.
Yeah.
One thing that might be reassuring to you to remember is the person you're meeting with, it's their job to have these meetings. Mm-hmm. Put yourself in their hands and let them guide you.
Yeah.
You know, because they really know what they're doing. Now, that I'm not saying let them just completely take over, but like, trust that they enjoy talking to people or they wouldn't have this job, mm-hmm. that they want to fall in love with you. That would make their day.
Yeah. Well, and I was thinking, because this is going to be, you know, a lower level executive, and then they want to, you know, seem great to their boss and and find the next big writer, you know.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
You guys are helping each other.
Mm-hmm.
What else, Sarah?
Oh, this I have a question.
Okay.
I know. This is fun for us.
So, along the lines of like the point of a general, I was told, you know, the company slate for TV development, and what happens if, none of the shows go through?
I mean, then you still had a great meeting.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
in theory, they're going to have more shows next year, and they might remember you and mm-hmm. might even bypass the general and say, oh, hey, remember Mary that... I'll say girl because that's what they'll say. That girl we
that
met.
That baby writer is what they'll say.
Yes, yes. She'd be good for this, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. or maybe they'll have you come in and meet another executive. So even if none of the shows go, it's still very valuable. Yeah.
And that's also why we always say have a lot of irons in the fire, mm-hmm. because so many things just disappear. You can't predict what is going to be the thing that hits.
Yeah. And I mean, this is obvious, but just be yourself and be confident. Like, it's hard because as writers, a lot of times we're not performers. Now, luckily you are, mm-hmm. so maybe that'll be easier for you. But you don't want to be too unsure of yourself because it'll make you seem not ready.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, you want to seem ready for a job.
Yeah.
And confidence is part of that because they want to think they can put you in a writer's room and you're not going to like crumble,
mm-hmm.
as some do. Crumble, as I myself have crumbled. So I would say confidence. Don't let your Midwestern, sense of modesty keep you from shining.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And I think also as women, we often don't feel comfortable presenting ourselves as like, we are the inevitable choice. We are awesome.
Yeah.
I do think in this, I'm generalizing, mm-hmm. but like, I do feel like men are better at just selling themselves and sort of embracing their amazingness and convincing other people they're amazing, whereas mm-hmm. we tend to feel like we're overstepping if we do that.
Yeah.
So just, or you're like, awesome, you be awesome.
I think it's also in a double whammy because the Midwest thing is if you do it, you feel like you're bragging.
Yes.
And then if you're bragging, you're being rude in your mind.
Now, here's a question. Thank you note.
Mm. Yeah.
Now, I definitely think she should send a thank you note, but I sort of feel that an email thank you note is sufficient, not a handwritten.
100% agree.
I think it shows, again, more confidence.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we get thank you notes fairly often from people who we've met with, and emails are always totally fine, and it definitely makes people more memorable.
If they send a thank
you
note.
If they send a thank you note, mm-hmm. just because when you're meeting with someone, you're usually meeting with a bunch of people at the same time,
mm-hmm.
because there's some job or something that you're meeting with people about. Sending that thank you note really can be the thing that makes you kind of stand out.
Mm-hmm.
So but definitely. I do think email is sufficient. I think sometimes a handwritten thank you note can feel trying too hard.
Well, and also people lose handwritten thank you notes.
Yes, they can get lost.
Too.
And if I'm thinking about a job 6 months from now and I'm like, oh, that Mary person, I can just, look you up right in my emails and mm-hmm. you'll pop up. So
now let me clarify, by the way, the handwritten thank you note. If it's someone you've actually worked with and then they give you a handwritten thank you note, that's ideal. That's wonderful.
Yes,
that's
very, very nice. That's very thoughtful. Yeah.
That's wonderful.
We love those.
But if it's just a meeting, I think an email is fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And then like a job interview, you know, they always tell you ask questions at the end. Is there sort of a repertoire of questions you have?
That's a good question.
Well, first of all, that reminds me that a question they will definitely ask you is what TV shows you watch.
Oh, yeah.
And what TV shows you like. So just be prepared for that, because I am never prepared for it. Mm-hmm. I know it's coming and I always go blank on that question. It's just like a glitch in my brain. So know that they'll ask and be ready with your answers.
Oh,
and
I do that too. Yeah,
I'm like blank out.
I don't watch TV, but then I do, you know.
And then the other thing is, if they ask you, well, what do you want to write? Don't say drama, comedy, movies, TV. Say one thing.
Okay.
It's in your case, I believe it's comedy.
Yeah.
TV
yeah.
comedy. I would just hone just right that, in on yeah. that. It's much better if you have a particular answer, because, again, it allows them to see you in a lane. And mm-hmm. being seen in a lane is actually a good thing.
Yeah. And I do think you should have a couple questions prepared. You know, like, what project are you most excited about? Mm-hmm. Just basic questions, but don't feel like you have to force them in.
Mm.
I mean, one thing you could always ask someone, well, what would you do at this stage if you were me? Mm-hmm. What would your next move be? Or what do you think would be valuable for me to write next?
Oh,
what kind of
I'm writing
script?
That down, I know.
Is there a kind of script that seems to be most in demand? Or, you know, I mean, something about their expertise mm-hmm. that allows them to share what they know about what's going on in the business.
That's good.
Yeah, that's smart.
All right, Mary. Do you
go
feel prepared?
Forth and be general.
I will. I will. I like 2 cups of coffee before I go into.
Yeah. And Brooke recommends this, you know, the power pose, doing a power pose.
I don't know what that is.
That's like the superhero pose.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Like, do that in the mirror before you go.
Okay.
I don't know.
I thought
if it
you
works.
Meant in the meeting.
No, not in the meeting. For
don't
God's
do that.
Sake.
Don't do that.
Not in the meeting.
No.
All right. You'll be great, Mary. They're going to love you.
And next up, we'll reveal this week's photo Hollywood pack, but first an ad break.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, Liz, now it's time for this week's Hollywood hack.
Yes, and Sarah, this is a hack I actually got at our meetup a few weeks ago, the one we had at the Federal Bar. I met this woman talking to her, and she was saying, oh, you're probably going to be taking a lot of pictures today. You want to know my photo hack? And I said, of course I do. She's an actress. She said to basically, when someone's taking your picture, you turn your head a bit to the side so that they get your jawline. And apparently that is more flattering of an angle than straight on.
Wow.
And so you and I trotted right over to you and was like, Sarah, we have to do this.
We adopted that immediately.
All of our pictures from the meetup were like turning our head this way and that. I feel like I'm still figuring out my perfect angle. Like, I'm never sure if I should turn left or right. You don't want it to be so much that it's obvious.
Yeah.
And I feel like sometimes it's not flattering, but other times it's incredibly flattering. So I'm still working on it.
When you have to figure out, like, if one person is turning their head one way and the
right.
other, like, which way are you turning
yes.
your head?
It's
when I also feel like now it's like it has to be a high angle. You're supposed to
yes.
sort of lift your neck
yes.
and
jut out.
Jaunt your head out a little bit, sort of like a turtle, and then angle your head to the side. Like,
yeah.
I feel like the selfie pose thing it's getting a little overwhelming.
Well, this isn't even selfie. This is actual photos.
Oh, just photos. But you're right. But it's like.
But both are overwhelming.
But I do feel like, even though I feel incredibly silly when I'm doing it,
mm-hmm.
I do think the pictures are better.
They are. There's no doubt.
Like, if you look at the pictures of us from the premiere party and the after party that we went to at Idle Hour, the viewing party, they're good pictures. And I'm doing all those silly things with my
head. Yes. So tip of the day, show your jawline. Let us know if it works for you. We're here to serve.
That's right.
And that is it for this episode of Happier in Hollywood. For questions or comments, email us or send a voice memo to happierinhollywood@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, and please subscribe if you haven't already.
Thank you to our executive producer, the amazing Chuck Reed, and everyone at Sancola Sound. You can follow them on Instagram at Sancola Sound. Again, thank you to Sugar Studios LA. You can check them out at sugarstudiosla.com. And thank you, of course, to everyone at Cadence 13.
Thank you to our assistant, Mary Merkins. We wish you luck in this big, wonderful general you've got coming up.
And as always, thank you to Gretchen Rubin. Happier in Hollywood is part of the Onward Project.
Get in touch. I'm on Instagram at sfain, and Liz is at Liz Craft. We also have a Facebook group. Search for Happier in Hollywood on Facebook to join in on the conversation.
Until next week, I'm Liz Craft.
And I'm Sarah Fain. Thanks for joining us. It's a fun job.
And we enjoy it. Oh, yikes. Our Zaytoon thing got expensive.
But she said
oh,
she just
that's
it.
Our inexpensive dinner? Like, okay. Is that going to be too much?
Okay, well, let's look at it.
Because that's going to be, that's a lot of food. Like, yeah. 40 pieces of falafel.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Yeah.
That was just her suggestion.
Mary brings snacks.
Because, I mean, $80 worth of hummus seems excessive.
Like a lot of hummus. For 20 people. Yeah.
That feels like, I mean, a lot of hummus.
Yeah.
That's $80 worth of hummus.
From the Onward Project.